All right, welcome back. Is everyone back? I'm ready to continue. Amazing. All right, jumping back in. We're almost done, you guys. Okay, so now we're going to talk about facing and overcoming triggers. So you will notice that this is a very similar process to what I went over with you in the awareness workshop or the wake up workshop. So first is always awareness. So notice that you're feeling triggered, whatever that trigger is. And if you're expecting a trigger to be this big response, remember, if you have complex PTSD, it may be subtle. It may just look like, ruminating in your head for days or weeks on end. Okay. That's a trigger too. So you maybe even need to say out loud, I notice that I'm feeling triggered. Notice what you feel in your body. This is why it requires slowing down. What does that trigger feel like? Can you describe it in detail? When I say describing how you're feeling, I mean using feeling words. So a lot of people, whenever I work with clients, sometimes they're like, I just feel so disrespected. I just feel so disappointed. I just feel so angry or, whatever. Those aren't sensation words necessarily. So when I say describe a sensation in detail, I'm saying, is it hot? Is it cold? Is it tingling? Is it tense? When you focus on it in your body, do you see a certain color in your mind? Is it a certain shape? Like just getting really, really familiar with that sensation can help it to not feel so scary because you're giving your mind something to do besides ruminating on the sensation and being like, oh my God, what does it mean? What if it means this? What if it means that? Oh, it must mean this about my health. Oh, it must mean that. Instead of doing that and going down that rabbit hole, you're going down the like, oh, I noticed this like hot, sort of ball of buzzing, yarn in my pelvis, which is a real sensation that I've had, which is why I came up with that so fast. So this will help you slow down. It will help you stay present in your bodies, which is necessary because triggers often have really big, fast energy. Sometimes they don't, but sometimes they do. So to be really aware of what you're feeling by describing what you're feeling, even if it's just internally to yourself. Second, presence and love. So you're already present if you're aware, but the love part is noticing where that triggered sensation lives and holding yourself wherever that is. Right? Like you're like giving that part of you a hug. You're just like saying like, I'm here. Like, okay, this part of me feels really fucking uncomfortable and triggered right now. I'm here. I'm here with you. I'm totally accepting of what's happening. The area where the body in the body where your trigger lives is important because it's a part of you that feels unsafe and uncertain, who may not actually realize that what's happening in the past is not what's happening in the present. And this part wants to be held and loved. This part does not want to be shamed or judged or rejected or abandoned or fixed. If you were at the first workshop or if you've seen the replay, you'll remember the bus exercise where we talk about the kids on the bus. Those are our different parts. So when we're triggered, it's usually a part that is triggered. Like your perfectionist part can be triggered. Your doom and gloom kid on your bus can be triggered. And so you're just offering that love and that presence to that part of you by placing your hand on that part of your body. So in a trigger, there's a step that's not present with this four-step process. It's now five steps. So this is if you're having a really big, fast moving energy of a trigger, you're very hyper or hypo aroused. This is when you would want to use a nervous system CPR tool. And you got that. It's included with your purchase of Feel Without Fear. That is very intentional so that you have it for whenever you get triggered. This is when you're like, maybe not for like the subtle triggers, but for the big ones, if you're really overwhelmed, you're really uncomfortable, you're really outside your window of tolerance, don't try to go into like a healing, logical space in that state. It's going to be really hard for you to access. You first have to turn the volume down on that sensation or that alarm in your body. So a nervous system CPR tool is exactly what it sounds like. It's for your oh shit nervous system moments, right? It's for like when you're about to have a panic attack, when you're about to fly off the handle at your kid because they've pissed you off again, when you're about to fly off the handle at your spouse, when you're about to slam the door and leave something, like that's when you want to use a nervous system CPR tool. So these are things like havening, box breathing, shaking, a physiological sigh. I think there's 8 or 9 like really small downloadable videos in nervous system CPR. You can literally download them onto your phone so that no matter where you are, if you're in one of those oh shit moments, you can pull it out. And I'm like right there with you being like, okay, here's how we haven. This is what we're doing. We're making ourselves feel safe right now. So it's like David coined the phrase. It's like having Lindsay Lohan in your pocket, which is really cute, I think. So that's what nervous system CPR is. If you need that step, if you're really, really triggered, you may not be really triggered. It may be one of those like more nebulous, more subtle triggers. Next, noticing the voice in your head, noticing the stories that you have about that trigger. What is the voice in your head saying about what you're feeling or what you're triggered by or who you're triggered by? Is there a story of blame? Is there a story of shame towards yourself? Is it saying that this is too much and you can't handle it? Is this saying this doesn't work? Everything Lindsay taught me doesn't work. Just notice whatever the voice is saying and continue remaining present and loving in your body. Remember, your mind is a meaning-making machine. So what meaning is it making about what you're feeling? What meaning is it making about this trigger? What is it making about what you're feeling about this trigger? And then finally, choosing. You want to make a conscious choice of how you want to respond to what you're feeling. Responsibility is the ability to respond. Okay. The choice puts you in a place of responding rather than reacting. Because when we're triggered, we tend to just react instead of responding. And that's when we're in those unconscious awareness because we're not meeting it with awareness. So we don't have the option of responding. We only have the option of reacting, which can often hurt self or other people. So how can you use your agency and sovereignty to take care of yourself, right? Drop into your highest self, who you want to be driving the bus. What would my highest self choose in this situation? What would be the best outcome for everyone involved in this situation, including me? Do I need to set a boundary? Do I need to stay in this discomfort a little longer and widen my window of tolerance to it? Do I actually need to walk away and take a break? Do I need to unfollow someone? Do I need to block someone, depending on if the trigger is coming from the internet? So from the moment you become aware that you're triggered, right? Maybe you even have to say out loud, I notice that I'm feeling triggered. And you notice that sensation, you're holding yourself with love. And before you make that choice, there's always a pause. Sometimes the pause is that long. Sometimes there's more space. If you're practiced at slowing down, you can create a longer pause. The energy of a trigger can sometimes be really fast. And as I keep saying, awareness requires slowing down. Slowing down is a conscious choice. You are more likely to interrupt the pattern or the trigger by responding in a way that supports your goal to face your trigger and widen your window of tolerance when you have that pause. Because then you are making a grounded, congruent choice for yourself versus a reactive choice. So again, that process is being aware, feeling what you feel, holding yourself, using a CPR tool if necessary, if you're super hyper or hypo-aroused, noticing those stories, pausing, choosing. You will have to practice this over and over and over and over. And maybe the voice in your head is creating a story about this. Like, ugh, why does it have to be this hard? Why do I have to practice? There must be something wrong with me if I can't get this right the very first time I ever try it. I just want to fix this and forget it. I don't want to practice. I don't want to deal with this shit anymore. Like, I don't want to have to go through this process. If that's happening, just notice. Be aware that that's happening, that there's that objecting voice in your head. Hold that part of yourself. Love that part of yourself. Notice the story. Pause and choose. You can have that story and still choose something different. Like, it's totally possible for you to do that. Big question I get a lot. What if I don't know the past stuff that's bringing up present moment feelings? A lot of people have this story that if they can't remember the trauma, if they can't remember why they're triggered, they're not going to be able to heal it. You do not have to remember, relive, or recount traumatic experiences to heal from them. But you do have to change how you relate to your body's sensations. Because remember, sensation is your body's language. Your body has no other way of communicating to you except through sensation. So to navigate triggers differently, to change your reaction to a response of a trigger, to do it differently is going to require you to change how you relate to your body's sensations. You have to re-pattern the relationship with your body and with sensation. And this is true whether your typical pattern is hyperarousal, meaning you fucking feel everything and you're sensitive to everything, or hypoarousal, where you feel numb and you feel like you feel almost nothing. Either way, you're going to have to change how you relate to your body sensations, even if that sensation is the sensation of numbness, because that's still your body communicating. The main reason we avoid triggers is because it's likely a child part of us who is triggered, not the adult self. The child part does not know how to hold herself because she is a child. She's not supposed to know. She doesn't know that she can feel hard things and be okay. She doesn't know that she can face this big, scary feeling of a thing and come out on the other side and respond to it differently. Because again, this is one of our little kids on the bus. It literally is like we revert to a younger version of ourselves when we're reacting in these situations, which is often why our reactions are so emotionally immature, because we're reverting to an age when we were emotionally immature. So we stop feeling. Right? We have this story that it's too hard. It's too uncomfortable. I can't get through this. I don't know how. We react instead. The adaptive survival pattern comes up to protect us from the feeling. We don't want to feel that uncomfortable feeling. So we have to do something to prevent ourselves, right? That like, you can even see with my body language. I'm like, ugh, right? It's that sort of like bracing, backing away, ugh, feeling. Sometimes we dissociate, we immobilize, we avoid. We blame others for not posting a trigger warning on the internet, and we call people harmful, or we blame other people or whatever. We're in a fight response about it. Many, many different reactions and responses are totally normal. But if you could trust yourself to hold yourself in love and compassion while feeling hard feelings, would you have to avoid them? Would you need to dissociate? Would your body need to do that to protect you? Would you need to run away or blame people or get defensive? If you could trust yourself to be present and compassionate with yourself when you're going through a hard feeling, would you have to go into these adaptive survival patterns to avoid it? No, you wouldn't. You would just feel the feeling and get through it. The goal is not to stop the feeling, because the feeling is your body communicating to you. So if we cut that off, then now we've cut off all communication between you and your body. The goal is to feel whatever you feel without being afraid of it. And remember, fear looks like judgment. Fear looks like blame. Fear looks like shame. Fear looks like a lot of different things. All of them are rooted in fear. So we have to feel our triggers. We have to feel the overwhelm, the fear, the anger, the sadness, the disgust, the anxiety, the threat. If you're not feeling it, you're not healing it. It's also important to remember that nothing is black and white, okay? Part of healing ourselves from childhood trauma is that we start to be able to accept the complexities of things, the nuances of things. So for example, maybe something is outside your window of tolerance right now, but you leave room for the possibility that it won't always be outside your window of tolerance. That's opening yourself up to the complexity of the human experience. Also, another complexity we have to consider is that there is a difference between avoiding triggers and setting healthy boundaries. You can feel triggered, and also the person that you're triggered by isn't a bad or a harmful person, right? Just because you're triggered by their behavior doesn't automatically mean that they're bad and harmful. Many years ago, David has a brother. He still has a brother, his older brother, Matt. When I first came into the family, Matt was horrible to me. Matt found every opportunity he could to try to humiliate me in front of the family, to pick on me, to make me out to be like a bad person for whatever reason. We never understood it to this day. We still don't understand why Matt kind of like honed in on me to pick on me. And the rest of the family like wouldn't say anything about it. Like he would berate me in a family group text message, and David's parents and his sister and brothers and everybody would literally like skip over it and not say anything. 10 years ago, David and I made the decision that Matt's behavior was not changing. He had consistently been like this for over 10 years. And I was like, I'm not going to be around him anymore. Like, I'm just setting a boundary. If there's a family gathering and Matt's going to be there, I'm not going to be there. And if that means I have to miss Thanksgiving, if that means I have to miss Christmas, if that means I miss family reunions, like whatever it means I have to miss, I'm willing and ready to miss those things so that I don't have to be around your brother. And Dave was like, yeah, me too. So I'm not avoiding the trigger by setting a boundary to protect myself. So I hope you can kind of see the difference that there is some complexity there. So more complexities that deserve our space is our agency, right? Our agency is our ability to choose what to do to influence the outcome. You're not required to face and heal everything. You don't have to be a constant self-improvement project. If there's triggers that seem too scary, too big to go there, it's okay if you avoid those things. You have the agency to choose that. You're not a failure if you get triggered and you react unconsciously. I still do that. Everyone does. It doesn't matter where you get on your healing journey. There is no person who's so enlightened that they never have an unconscious reaction. This doesn't make you a harmful person, even if you inadvertently cause harm when you're triggered, right? Like if you're a parent, you know what it's like to cause harm and to hurt your child when you're triggered and you didn't mean to, you didn't do it on purpose, but it still happened. And that still doesn't make you a bad parent. Here's some more ways to meet yourself with compassion when you're triggered. So if you're doing the bus exercise, you can give that inner child or that kid on the bus some reassurance. You can let them know that you love them unconditionally and that you believe that this is hard or scary for them. You can let them know that you're here to protect them and to comfort them. When you're triggered, we are likely to use eternity statements. If you find yourself in a like, you always do this or you never do that, you're triggered. Okay. Because we usually only use always and never statements when we're really triggered. So just remembering that this trigger will pass just like every other time you've been triggered and using that eternity language of always and never is usually never helpful, not to yourself or to the situation. Another way to meet yourself with compassion is to remind yourself that you're an adult now, not a child, and you have resources, skills, and safe relationships now that you didn't have as a child. I am so, so grateful that the universe allowed me to wait until I was 39 years old before I had to face this big abandonment trigger that I talked about earlier in the workshop. If I had had to do that when I was 18, 25, 30, I would not have had the resources or the safe relationships to be triggered in those relationships and realize that I could still be okay and that those people were safe in a way that my mom wasn't safe. So I'm really, really grateful that I didn't have to figure that out as a kid or as a young adult because I wouldn't have figured it out. Another way to meet yourself with compassion is refuse, absolutely refuse to hate, shame, or abandon yourself. Refuse. If you notice that self-talk come in, that self-shaming, that self-hatred, self-abandonment, if you even have to say out loud, no, I will not abandon myself. No, I will not hate myself for this. That's okay. Instead, channel any anger that you feel. Again, you can take the same anger that you would use to blame and shame yourself and channel it into your inner critic or into the parent or the caregiver that installed the inner critic. Anybody ever notice that their inner critic is really not them? It really sounds like someone else that they think is them. Like my inner critic sounds a whole lot like my mother. Okay. So when I have that hate, shaming, self-loathing voice in my head, I can sit there and stew on it and I can use up all my energy doing that. Or I can take that same energy and I can out loud, even though my mom isn't in front of me, being like, you fucking bitch. I hate you for installing this voice in my head. I hate you for having these fucking unrealistic standards of perfectionism. Fuck you. Guess what? Anger released, right? Because I'm not directing it at myself. I'm directing it at where that initially started. Because nobody's natural inner voice is to be that critical and expect perfection and all of that. That's installed, that's programmed into us. And then it morphs into what we think is our inner voice, but it's not. And I'm not hurting my mother by doing that in an energetic way where she's not present. If she was present, that would be different. That would be problematic, but she's not. Like she has no idea that I'm processing something in that way, but it allows me to energetically discharge it versus holding on to it and it taking up space in my body. More ways to meet yourself with compassion. Seek support. Don't hesitate to reach out and ask for help or talk to somebody. Shame isolates. notice this and choose to seek support anyway. You need intimate relationships where you can share about your triggers and flashbacks and talk and feel your way through them. Especially if you have abandonment wounds. You do not, if you have the story, I just need to wait until I've healed myself before I can be in a relationship. And I'm not even talking about a romantic relationship. I'm talking about any kind of relationship, friendship, platonic relationship, whatever. If you have a story, I've got too much shit going on. I need to really work on myself some more before I can be in a relationship with anybody. I would not make a good friend to anybody right now. If you have that story and you have abandonment wounding, that story is going to keep you from healing your abandonment wounding, because you can't heal abandonment wounding on your own. It requires being in a relationship with someone and allowing yourself to get triggered, allowing yourself to have those oh shit moments, allowing the pattern of hypervigilance to come up so that you have opportunities to catch it. Refuse to go into patterns of perfectionism. If your inner critic again is like, well, you're not doing this right. God, you're fucking slow. You're never going to get better. You keep repeating this thing. Refuse to go into those. Again, redirect that energy somewhere else. Redirect it to someplace outside of yourself, even if you have to go scream it into the sky. And be patient. Please be patient with yourselves. Recovery takes so much time. Recovery is a lifelong process. It's not a one and done in a retreat, one and done in a Fuel Without Fear program, one and done with 6 months of coaching. Like, it takes time. You're going around a spiral, and every time around the spiral, you get into patterns even more deeply. All right. Pete Walker says, be patient with a slow recovery process. It takes time in the present to become unadrenalized and considerable time in the future to gradually decrease the intensity, duration, and frequency of flashbacks. Real recovery is a gradual, progressive process, often two steps forward, one step back, not an attained salvation fantasy. Don't beat yourself up for having a flashback. All right. Do you guys need a break, since we just had a break and came back like 20 minutes ago? We may not need. Okay. Nobody needs a break. If you do, just say you need a break and we'll have a break. Okay, cool. Then we can go straight into the Q&A. I hope you guys enjoyed that and found it somewhat enlightening or beneficial.